Hello, America. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. I'm telling you right now, don't let your retirement touch the bank. And if it's there, you need to get it out. Dodd-Frank 2010, UCC Section 8, they can keep it. There's no two ways about it. You are an unsecured creditor. Most people are unaware of that. You need to look into that. Noble Gold can help you with that. Go to your phone and call 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. Got an interesting show for you here today. We've got a man of impeccable background. His experience is tremendous. He worked in the Reagan administration in various roles, including nuclear weapons, including defense strategy. Fantastic background. His name is Frank Gaffney. He's the founder of the Center for Security Policy and Present Danger China, and he's well known for his hardline stance on Chinese geopolitics. So you know we're kindred brothers on that point. He interprets the recent Alaskan summit as evidence that it's Xi Jinping in China, not Putin, that's orchestrating real power. And we're going to get into the Chinese threat and what we need to be concerned about right here on the show. Frank, first time guest on the show. Really appreciate you coming on. I know you're going like a chicken with his head cut off 100 miles an hour, and appreciate you taking the time to do that. And you're saying pretty much what we've said here on the show. It's China I'm worried about. What was your take on the Alaskan summit?
Dave, thanks so much for having me. The chicken with the head missing is definitely my deal. The way I see it is this is just common sense, honestly. If you look at the available facts, Vladimir Putin went to Beijing about 2 weeks before he launched this invasion of Ukraine. I believe at the minimum, it was green-lighted there by Xi Jinping, if not essentially subject to his direction. Certainly, what we know is that Xi's China has benefited most from the war. It's been able to get access to limitless cut rate oil and gas from Russia. It's been able to sell arms to the Russians. And most especially, and I think this is why, again, common sense suggests that the man that is really calling the shots here is Xi, not Putin. Xi has benefited tremendously from the chaos that has been created by the Ukraine war. And for that matter, when he, I think, perpetrated a similar deal in the Middle East. Think of it. We've been tremendously distracted, not just the United States, but the Europeans as well. The alliance has been fractured, if not, really terribly and profoundly undermined. We've also seen that our treasury has been greatly depleted, as has our arsenal, trying to, help prop up the Ukrainians. All of this has redounded to the benefit of the Chinese because I think it has helped them move forward inexorably on what they want to do in the way of aggression of their own, probably with the Russians' help, by the way, in the Pacific and possibly beyond. So all of this is what I think is the context for the Alaska meeting and the subsequent meetings here with the Europeans and Zelensky in Washington. And yet it's almost been completely ignored, unnoted, certainly not addressed as best I can tell, namely the Chinese role and the desire that has actually been expressed by the Chinese foreign minister, a guy by the name of Wang, that they want to see the war continue in Ukraine. I mean, that's a clue, don't you think?
Absolutely. But I wonder about the chaos that we're hearing from Chinese insiders that escaped the tyranny. And they're telling us there's real chaos politically in the CCP. And Xi has lost some power, particularly with the military. Is that going to come into play? Or are we looking at kind of group rule and it's no longer just Xi Jinping?
It's a very good question. I don't know the answer, to be honest with you. I'm not sure that anybody does. I will tell you, my concern is that while you'd think that if she's got lots of problems at home and, uncertainty as to his future hold on power, and there's a lot of purges apparently of some of his own appointees in the senior ranks of the military, and all of which suggests that, you know, his days may be numbered, that would be good news for us. The problem is that tyrants, when they get into that kind of trouble, frequently opt to lash out, notably for the purposes of creating a really, really dangerous dynamic. The boogeyman from the outside becoming the reason that the people of the country in question need to rally around the flag and support the government and go to war in some cases. And so that's what makes me very nervous about this situation. It may not be good news at all. It may actually be a further impetus behind what I think is ultimately Xi's ambition, which is to lash out at not just the Taiwanese, not just the Filipinos, maybe the Japanese, but us as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. We have a nephew that lives in Taiwan, married to a local girl there, and they have a baby. And he's very well reasoned. He works as a translator. And we spent some time with him at his parents' home in San Diego here recently. And I was kind of surprised to hear how he looked at China. He said, they're a huge threat to us, and you're not hearing about it much in America, that the danger is still there. If you were to look at this strategically, and I agree with you, Xi's backed into a corner, do you think that China would start with a Pearl Harbor type attacks before going after Taiwan?
Well, if you're asking my professional judgment on this, I think what we have here is the potential for something that will make Pearl Harbor look like a day at the beach.
Exactly.
A threat to our homeland, yes. But the problem is not just, you know, forward deployed installations like Pearl Harbor. Under the Biden administration, we have, by, I think, conservative estimates, permitted tens of thousands. I've heard numbers as high as 100, maybe even 150,000 Chinese soldiers into our country.
Yes.
Now, do we know they're Chinese soldiers? No, we don't exactly, because they weren't really scrutinized coming in. And that doesn't even count the gotaways. I'm talking about the ones that we know came through and were just waved in, more or less. But they look like Chinese People's Liberation Army personnel. They behaved like possibly special operators at that. And they are here in numbers. And David, I feel compelled to say, if you think about it, imagine the damage that was done by 19 amateurs on 9/11, and multiply that by orders of magnitude in the hands of both numbers and professionalism of Chinese military personnel, and the kind of damage that could be inflicted at any moment if Xi Jinping lights it up, as I say, would make something that, you know, we suffered through at Pearl Harbor pale into insignificance.
I agree, because you bring in Guam, Diego Garcia, and the whole thing. But, you know, you're right about the Chinese infiltrators. I've done some analysis with retired Border Patrol Supervisor J.J. Correll, and we looked at pictures of Chinese that were being interdicted by the Border Patrol, and a couple of things really stood out. One, they were handing them papers. I don't know illegal immigrants that have papers. They were handing them papers. And what we saw repeatedly, Frank, was their satchels were down at their right foot, and many of them stood at parade at rest, just like you'd see in the military. So you're absolutely right about the danger there. And I've had special forces people tell me in this country, well-trained group of 8 soldiers can take down the power grid in a city the size of Los Angeles. So I'm really concerned about that too. You're absolutely right. Because I would expect if we go to war with China, we'd have domestic issues. That's what I'm hearing you say.
I think that you have to assume that so. And by the way, and I'm sure you've been addressing this on your program as well, Dave, is they got company. There are large numbers of communists inside this country. You know, the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter come to mind, but they're hardly alone. To say nothing of jihadists with whom they have made common cause of late.
Yes.
And so the prospect for real disorder, I mean, the threat to our power grid is one that I've been preoccupied with for 20 years or more. But I'm simply saying that that's almost certainly among the target sets that these guys would have. And it probably won't be confined to just a single city, even a massive one like Los Angeles, if they do.
Yeah, I totally agree. But here's another concern I have along these lines, too, domestically, is the fact that we know that China is the first mover for fentanyl that's killed over an estimated 300,000 Americans since Biden came into power. And how is that not an act of war? And shouldn't we be responding directly to that threat?
Well, where to begin? Yes, that is an act of war. It is chemical warfare, actually, and it has killed, by some estimates, 200,000 or so Americans since they began doing it. And when I say they began doing it, you know, this idea that somehow the Chinese government has any plausible deniability about this is, of course, nonsense. In fact, the superb chairman of the House Select Committee on the CCP, John Molinar of Michigan, issued a report last, I think, in the spring, if I'm not mistaken, documenting that the Chinese government has effectively been subsidizing and actually profiting from the manufacture of fentanyl components, which they have also been responsible for getting to cartels whose money they launder in Mexico, where the stuff is assembled and then smuggled into the United States. They also smuggle some of it indirectly, by the way, through, oh, I don't know, UPS and FedEx. But the point is, and this is something that we've done a lot of work on. You're kind enough to mention the Committee on the Present Danger China, of which I'm the vice chair. We do a weekly webinar, and we've done, I think, about 220 of them in the past 2 years, each of which is dedicated to addressing one aspect or another of what the Chinese call unrestricted warfare that they've been waging against us since the 1990s. And we're simply trying to elevate public awareness, because that's the biggest problem we've got, frankly, is most Americans have no idea that, like the proverbial frog, we're being slowly boiled to death because they're incrementally using this kind of warfare. And it's, yes, it's chemical warfare, it's economic warfare, it's political warfare and subversion, it's information operations, it's using our finances to underwrite their military buildup, it's biological warfare, by the way. And all of this, as I'm sure you know, Dave, all of this has been, you know, essentially laid out for us in a playbook published back in 1999 by two senior colonels in the People's Liberation Army under the title, helpfully, of Unrestricted Warfare. And they enumerate the lines of attack they would use against us to take us down before they had the means to do so militarily, which they didn't back in the 1990s, as you know. But they do now. So shooting war, maybe starting with the techniques that we talked about a moment ago, maybe starting with Taiwan, I don't know, the Philippines, they're at the cusp of, you know, a war with Philippines right now, as you probably are aware. But however it starts, a shooting war seems now decidedly an option in addition to the pre-kinetic kinds of warfare they've waged against us for decades.
I don't know if you're comfortable addressing this or not, but starting with the House Oversight Committee and Comer, I'm satisfied the Chinese made penetration into the White House and related family members, as well as other politicians. How widespread do you think the Chinese infiltration of our political structure is at the top levels?
Well, I think it's extensive, and I would commend to you and your audience, if you've not already been tracking on his work, Trevor Loudon,
yes,
who has published numerous books on the subject, including multi-volume sets about security risk senators and House Un-Americans, that document this point with exhaustive research and detail. But as to your point about the White House, I think we need to start right at the head of the fish. Under the Biden administration, we had what a colleague of mine, a member of our Committee on the Present Danger of China, Sam Faddis, a career intelligence officer, used to say, using the terminology of that trade craft, namely espionage, that Joe Biden would be described as a, quote, controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party, unquote. And his son Hunter was also, used and compromised, and doubtless other members of their family. And think about the implications of that. I mean, I used to have a full head of hair. I pulled most of it out over the fact that we've had things like this taking place. And when you have the president compromised, and it's a matter of public knowledge, what does that mean for everybody else down the food chain as to whether they might do their own deal with the Chinese Communist Party, or at least, be a little bit, shall we say, lax about our security interests? The penetration is extensive, as I say, and it's almost impossible adequately to understand how deeply compromised we have been, and it's ongoing, unfortunately.
Yeah, President Trump still can't get rid of some of the internal blocks that we have with the penetration. And I've been told that by very reliable insider sources. And he's working on it by the day, but he keeps uncovering new obstacles within our government, particularly in the Pentagon. And I'm just worried if we actually got into a conflict with China, how much we'd be compromised in our military structure. Have you looked at that at all?
I have, look, it's assuredly the case that senior military officers and periodically we find out about lower ranking individuals, officers and enlisted personnel who get caught, selling stuff to the Chinese or otherwise working for them. But just think about this. Some of our frontline equipment depends upon ingredients or actual components that are sourced out of China. So is our medicine, by the way,
Yes.
including the medicine for our troops. If the Chinese use these sorts of opportunities to screw us up, and going back to the power grid, they've got 500 transformers inside our power grid, which we know, at least a couple of them we've sampled, have back doors so that they can be turned off. And to say nothing of, various other computers and so on that are involved. These are the sorts of vulnerabilities that we talk about in this book that I published about 2 years ago with a colleague of mine, entitled The Indictment, Prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and Friends for Crimes Against America, China, and the World. Now, those friends goes back to the point we've just been discussing. Dave, the people who are working for the Chinese Communist Party in this country, whether they're on Wall Street, whether they're in the media, whether they're in academia, whether they're in business, whether they're in political life, are fifth columnists inside our country
Yes.
that increase enormously our vulnerability, I'm afraid. I say prosecution, by the way, I don't necessarily mean in Article III courts, though I think that's appropriate in a lot of cases. But at the very least, as we're doing right here, right now, in the court of public opinion, people like Jamie Dimon, for example, of J.P. Morgan, and Brian Moynihan of Bank of America, who just in the past 2 or 3 months sent $5.4 billion to a Chinese military company called CATL that is making their submarines more of a threat to our Navy personnel and assets. And they've gotten away with it with impunity. And they're not only doing that kind of damage, but they've now created a precedent for doing it with something like 13 other Chinese military companies that are now hoping to get money that same way out of Hong Kong with the help of Americans like those guys. They ought to be prosecuted for, I believe, treason at the very minimum, as I say, with the American people.
Do you think Trump will move in that direction for prosecution, or is something tying his hands?
I don't know. He issued on the 21st of February an absolutely superb document. He called it a National Security Presidential Memorandum. If you go to the White House website, you can find it. You have to kind of look around, but look for it under America First Investment Policy. And he tasked in that memorandum basically every relevant agency of the US government to help stop our underwriting of the Chinese communists. And it was extremely thorough and well done. One oversight, he didn't send it to the Securities and Exchange Commission for some reason. But the trouble is, it's not been, as best I can tell, implemented in any way, let alone enforced. And so I'm very prayerful that that's one of the things that President Trump will get around to here before too much longer, because otherwise we are literally funding our demise.
Yes. Yeah, you're exactly right. And, I've done shows on rare earth minerals, and we're 10 years behind there. And that's the cutting edge of new technology. And then, of course, you mentioned the medicine. That's a huge concern. So if I were to hand the mantle of power to you, if I had such the authority to do so, and you're running America, what would you do to offset these imbalances that seem to hold us in check?
Well, look, I think President Trump is doing a number of the right sorts of things. He's set in motion a huge effort to reshore, I think in some 11 different categories, critical capabilities that are now resident overseas, many of them in China, unfortunately, some in not so reliable other sources. But we need them here. But unfortunately, that's going to take time. And I'm working with some companies that are trying to do that on a very accelerated basis. But by and large, it's going to be a year or so because of the situation, as you say, we've allowed to develop. In other areas, it's going to take even longer. So what I would be personally pushing for is trying to bring down the Chinese Communist Party. There's not a problem necessarily doing business with people in China if they're freed
Yeah.
of an outfit that has done incalculable harm to them, by the way. Some 100 million Chinese people have been killed by the Chinese Communist Party. They've got their own grievances, and that doesn't even count 400 or 500 million more that the Chinese Communist Party boasts of killing in the womb as part of their population control stuff, the one-child policy, as they called it. So I'm simply saying that we have a basis, I think, for common cause with the Chinese people, but they just have to be liberated, and they have to do that themselves. But we could help, I think, notably by cutting off the hard currency underwriting of the CCP.
I could not agree with you more. We've actually covered in here about the disenfranchisement of the Chinese young adults, that
Oh,
many
yeah.
of them aren't entering the workforce. They're being domestic engineers for their parents because they're so sick of the system, and this particularly the CCP. They actually have a phrase in Chinese that translates to let it rot, talking about CCP policies. They don't want to be in it. So I think the grounds for an uprising are there. But I keep going back to Tiananmen Square. I don't know if the people have the wherewithal to actually make that change.
Well, they can't without help. I think that's
I
the truth of the
agree.
matter. But look, I would just say this. On four separate occasions, the US government has intervened to help save the Chinese Communist Party. It goes back to Nixon, and then Clinton with the World Trade Organization, excuse me, George H.W. Bush with Tiananmen, to your point. Right after that, sending his national security advisor saying, "Hey, no problem here. Let's get back to business." Then the World Trade Organization, and now there are reports. A colleague of mine, Gordon Chang, very, very knowledgeable individual on all these issues, fears that the Trump administration is concerned about the instability that would arise if the Chinese Communist Party were to fall. And so, maybe what we're seeing is a bit of propping them up again. I think this would be an incalculable mistake, and I hope that's not going to be the case.
No, I totally agree with you. We should be trying to push this movement that's going on in China. And their banks are in crisis. I mean, the banks are hanging on to people's money and putting them into fake retirement accounts involuntarily. I mean, the seeds for discontent are clearly there.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we need to push that end of it. But I wonder, and I think you said it too, as Xi Jinping, if you're backed into a corner, I think the Chinese will start a war before they let the CCP fade.
Well, again, that really comes down to, do they have that option? And I think if the people of China were actually in tumult, it will make an awful lot of things very difficult for them to do in terms of starting or waging a war. Is it impossible? No, frankly, it's not impossible. Are there
Yeah.
reasons to be concerned about instability? Well, yeah, there are. But the dangers that are associated with allowing this operation to persist and to execute its strategy on its timetable, I think vastly exceed the possibilities that this is going to be messy, but their timetable is going to be, permanently, hopefully, disrupted. And think about it, the possibilities for the future. If the Chinese people are free and not enemies of the United States, I mean, the whole world really is transformed by that
Yes.
alone.
No, you're right. And they could be a tremendous economic partner to the United States
They could be.
if that were to happen. And I keep thinking Trump might be hoping that they're going to see the light, but I'm not confident. You've got a great background, Frank. I did some research on things that you've done, and people are going to want to be able to follow what you do. How do people do that?
I'm now the president of an organization called the Institute for the American Future, and I would commend to them our website, usfuture.org. And if they go to the site, they can see there five different vectors we're working on with five different coalitions. And I think if they'll, work through that food chain, they'll find some very interesting content at each of those sites. Including presentdangerchina.org, the one that we've been focused on here. There's a wealth of information and ways in which you can help us do what I call the special forces in the war of ideas missions.
Yeah, we'll send people there. We'll put the link up. Also, you mentioned that you've written a book. How do people get a copy?
It's called The Indictment. It's available wherever books are sold, I think, and through Amazon and so on. And if I may also just mention, we do a daily television show on Real America's Voice called Securing America. And I commend Substack, securingamerica.substack.com is another great resource too.
I appreciate the work that you're doing on behalf of America because we have undervalued the Chinese threat, and I'm glad you're bringing it to the forefront. Our guest has been Frank Gaffney. Frank, thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to having you back at a future date.
I do as well. Thank you, Dave.
Take
God bless
care.
you.
Hello, America. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Really good to be with you. Will there be another civil war in America? There is a lot of people, historians, economists, sociologists that are speculating on this. And generally we get develop a fairly uniform consensus of what the conditions would be like that would lead to a civil war. We have a lot of them, and I don't want to go too much in depth in this piece on the conditions. I've already done that. I'd like to talk about what it would look like and where it would possibly start. And I think I could put a probability on where it would start and then how it would progress. The one thing I can't do is tell you who would win, but I can tell you how bad it would be. You know what we do here? We're glad to bring our show to you. We have a newsletter that you really want to subscribe to because it's one-stop shopping for the multiple releases we do every single day. And you're saying, oh, well, how do you get that? An email. All you got to do is go to thecommonsenseshow.com, click on the newsletter link in the upper right-hand corner, put in your email address, and we do not sell data, and you'll receive your update every single day forever till you change your email. Then you'd have to re-register. But it's easy, easy to do, and I'd really recommend that you do it for convenience sake. We are brought to you by a great, great product, and it's one that I owe my life to. And it's a product that I think has universal applicability, and it's the Nanosoma liquid spray. It doesn't cure anything. And you're thinking, well, what good does it? Well, it boosts your immune system to unbelievable levels. Five sprays once a day is the maintenance dose, but you can take it as much as you feel you need it because it's all natural and can't harm you. It boosts vitamin C, regulates the vitamin D receptor as well as the nuclear receptors, and it supports telomeres, which is linked to longevity. This product took me from not being able to walk up a flight of stairs when I had RSV with strep lung linings and a bad prognosis to follow, to going into the gym and doing things I hadn't do, well, it was 25, 26 years. It turned back the hands of time for me. It can do the same thing for you. Because it's immune system, it's universally applicable. So how do you start? How do you get started with this? All you got to do is go to iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. We are already seeing strong precursors to civil war. Now, what we're seeing could stop, it could end right where it's at right now without any further developments. And what I'm specifically talking about is the high crime, the cash bail, the lawlessness, which has to be intentional. I mean, when you do no cash bail, you're basically saying commit the crime, you get out, and gee, we'd have to track you down and find you. And that's not the way the system was designed to work. And it's baffling to me. And we see it in what gets labeled primarily blue cities, let's say controlled by Democrats. And not all of the blue cities controlled by Democrats are this way. They're not. But there are some that are really, really bad. And then there are others. It's one thing to say that we feel that people that have come here have a right to stay here, even if they came against our laws. It's another thing to harbor fugitives who've been convicted of very serious crimes. And that's happening in these same cities. When you have one, you generally have the other. At least this is the conclusion I've drawn, and that's what the data supports from FBI data. So what you have is already defiance to law and order that's uniform across our country. And it violates the rights of the victims. And it doesn't matter whether you're citizen or non-citizen. You have the right not to be victimized. And government's first duty is to protect its citizens. And in these cities, I would argue they do not. And so what we have is Donald Trump's administration going into cities and looking for serious criminals who are undocumented and then deporting them and then fighting against court rulings in those areas that say you can't do that. So we already have the conflict with the ground zero, and this is the baseline of the controversy today. Tariffs are another minor contribution to this. I don't think it's a major. But we are looking at a situation now where there are also several politicians and their cronies who have, let's say, engaged in interesting practices. The biggest one that's surfacing is really a surprise to me, and it's the mortgage fraud. Living in one place and claiming another place is your primary residence so you can run for office. And let's see, Schiff is accused of this out of California, Letitia James out of Virginia. Now we have a Fed governor accused of the same thing. And the moment that one of these people are arrested indicted and possibly go to jail, I believe we're going to see the anti-ICE riots look like child's play compared to what's coming. Once one of these major political figures goes down that path, I'm going to say this straightforwardly, and some of my conservative friends won't like it, innocent until proven guilty. I'm not saying they're innocent. I'm saying our law says innocent until proven guilty. But we're beginning to see this pattern where you have public officials caught up in things they should not be doing. And the kinetic spark, the trigger event, if you will, to more widespread violence and riots will be the arrest of one of these people. And I have little doubt about that. And that's why I think there's been some hesitancy on the part of the Department of Justice to prosecute when it looks like there's enough evidence to go forward with at least a grand jury investigation. And even a grand jury investigation will trigger this. One of the conditions that you see listed by historians and others that study civil wars and what gets them going is the extreme polarization. And you don't have to agree with a lot of Donald Trump's policies. But even the policies that seemingly do good are being opposed by the left versus Donald Trump allegedly being on the right. And I'll give you an example, the tariffs. American wage income is going up faster now than inflation. The layoffs you're seeing are a lot to do with AI. Another topic, another time. And when you have higher wages, you have lower crime. The two events are always correlated, positively and negatively. And we're seeing that factor as well. You would think people would welcome that, but they don't. They don't. We're getting leftist activist judges ruling against the tariffs. They've done it several times now. And Trump is going to have to go back to the Supreme Court again to win that case. And basically, they're trying to prevent him from being president. And they want to oppose him at every turn, even when it benefits people in their jurisdiction. That's what typically people are calling Trump derangement syndrome. The polarization is deep, and I don't think it's repairable. Even if the left and right get together and say, okay, we can agree we're going to help these people. Let's say we have an initiative to help kids with autism or mental illness. You would think everyone would be on board with something like that. We're talking human beings, and we don't care what side of the political spectrum their parents would be on. We just want to help their lives be better. They would oppose that if it came out of the current administration, they the left. So the polarization runs very, very deep, very deep. And a lot of it's nonsensical. It doesn't make sense. And then we have the media that exacerbates this to a large extent, and they get their talking points. And one of the things, and I'm not a fan of Fox News, let's make sure we understand that, because I believe they support Donald Trump's administration as blindly and as universally as the people who oppose him. I almost think it's equal. Because I don't ever hear anything on Fox that would criticize Trump's administration. I've been critical of stablecoin. And I'd like to think that, yes, I have a bias because I like law and order and I want a good economy. And I don't think what we saw in the last 4 years is ever going to get us there. In fact, we were moving in a negative direction virtually on every indicator of what makes a successful country. But nonetheless, I'm critical when I feel I need to be critical. I don't like stablecoin. I don't like the involvement of Palantir in our government. I don't like that one bit. And I've made that crystal clear here. So what you see from people on my side of the fence, you know, we may have our bias towards something, but that doesn't make them immune to criticism. But I'm just saying is in general, Trump can do nothing right. When Schumer didn't want to shut down the government and he compromised with Trump on the budget, the left is still trying to drive him from office. They eat their own when they don't go into conformity. this polarization is the central factor that'll lead to the problem. Now, some people who are politicians may not believe in the platform on the left that's become rather extreme, but they're going to embrace it to get the support to further their own political career. And I believe Gavin Newsom is one example of this. So people say, well, Dave, where would a civil war start? I actually had a dream about this. It started in an area where the three Pacific states called themselves Cascadia. And there's actually been plans on the books, and I don't think people took them very seriously, but to have Canada annex Washington, Oregon, and California in a plan called Cascadia. I wrote about it over a decade ago. It's not new. It's not secret. It's out there in public. It's not being pushed today. But I will say this. The governors have a National Guard. And there's going to be a trigger event where Trump is going to go into cities and extract people who are criminals for deportation. Or it's going to be, we're going to prosecute people on the left for any suspected or accused crimes they may or may not have committed. And that's going to be a trigger event. And then the National Guards comes into play under control of the government. And they say, we are now an independent republic. Now, let me take you to something called CalExit. And I talked about this the other day on Paul Preston's Agenda 21 radio show. CalExit was a plan led by the left to extract California from the Union. And some ex-Obama officials like Eric Holder were part of this plan. They gave their support to it. And they thought California had reached a point where it couldn't be compatible with the rest of the country. So they wanted to become a protectorate under the UN. And on my website, I actually posted a picture where they had a makeshift embassy they constructed, very crude, but in Moscow, and had a press conference, and I have pictures of that press conference. And this was, well, gosh, 13, 14 years ago. It's been quite some time. The UN could play a central role in this. If the United Nations decided that the integrity and self-governing principles guaranteed under the 10th Amendment, federalism, separation of powers between federal and state, if they're being violated by the federal government, they could say these people have a right to separate. And let's say they say we're the independent state of Cascadia. Well, in the lame duck period of 2016, Barack Obama and, well, Ms. Barack Obama, he was the president, had help. They signed a treaty, which I believe was an illegal signing because it didn't go through the Senate with a 2/3 majority approval. And so Obama unilaterally signed this treaty along with John Kerry, the Secretary of State. And then the Kigali Principles is what this is called. And at the time, it was 28 member nations. I don't know what it is today. It may have grown, but it was 28 at the time. And if one of the 28 had a natural disaster, there was civil insurrection, there was an invasion, they could come to the rescue by bringing in UN, quote, peacekeepers. And I think there'd be a fair chance that the UN in this scenario would come in and lend support. And there you have a true civil war along with National Guard. And it would be ugly. I mean, if you look at how many military installations that are in California alone under federal control, it would absolutely be stunning. I think this is where a potential civil war could start. Now, I'm not predicting it. In fact, actually, when I would sit down and pray, I would pray against this happening. The Civil War in the 1860s was the most deadly war in American history. It killed 700,000 Americans because every casualty was an American. What bothers me now is the weaponry is so advanced, the collateral damage would be so pronounced that 700,000 would be a gift for casualty rates in something like this. And it wouldn't be confined to these three states. I just think that's where it would start. Because then you would not have firm division lines outside, quote, Cascadia. You would have the other areas. You'd have St. Louis. You would have Minneapolis, Chicago, Philadelphia, New York City, Boston, just to name a few. You would have these pockets of resistance. Now, I don't know how pronounced the participation in the Civil War each one of these would be, but I would suspect because we see lockstep in these cities with their talking points in the media, you probably would have a lot of uniformity of action, would be my guess. So then you would have the elements of a guerrilla war behind so-called U.S. lines. A civil war in this country would not be symmetrical as it was in the 1860s. It would be asymmetrical, atypical of geographical divisions. And truly, you would have, as they said in the Civil War, brother against brother. Now, that may be more of a metaphor, but we would have divisions within these cities and within these states. What would happen to Paul Preston's group of New California that are trying to create a 51st state? They've already adopted a constitution and they're doing it peacefully and they're doing it in the West Virginia model. But what would happen to them if California said, we're not part of the U.S.? Would they get persecuted? See, there's so many unanswered questions here. It's amazing. And I believe British Columbia would join in with the Cascadia people. They do have a lot in common with them. British Columbia and Washington State, it's like you cross a national boundary, but you're almost like in the same state. Same kind of rules, regulations, culture. I really think that they would be a part of it as well, too. Hawaii would be an interesting dichotomy. We have our Pacific Command there with the military, but Hawaii is hardcore left. What would happen there? That I see, this is where you get into, this is really, really bad. And when you look at where we're going as a country, that old saying, we have met the enemy and he is us. This is how America could fall. It might not be from Chinese invasion, Russian invasion, world war involving nukes. Could be internally because of the polarization. And some people already argue out there. And I've read some papers that say America's already fallen. We're just going through the motions of decline. And it's more of a slow burn, but one day there'll be a key trigger event. It'll cause things to pick up steam. This is not good. And with every being in my fiber, as I speculate here based on historical and current geographic and political ideals, and I say this is how it could go, I may be wrong or right. I might be partially right. I know that in some areas I'm right. Don't think there's any doubt. But the polarization that exists, it looks like it's irreparable. Because aside from a few people that are Democrats, there's no crossover to work with Republicans. And the Republicans are not quite as hostile, but they're not exactly on friendly terms. And they say it takes two to tango. That's what I'm saying by that last statement. AOC, Nancy Pelosi, Schiff, Newsom, they'll never be compromised. They'll never do what you should be doing in a republic form of democracy. What do my constituents want? Well, they want law and order and safety, and they want you guys to work together to make the country better instead of tearing it apart. I don't believe we're ever going to see that with these current leaders. And trust me, I'm not a fan of the right. Did I not? Before the last election, called for toss them all, said we need a website, tossthemall.com. Yeah, 95% of all these politicians deserve to be primaried out and get new people in. You'd be better off getting John the custodian, who's fair-minded, works hard to support his family, to sit down in Congress and make better decisions than the crap we have coming out of there now on both sides. Our politicians just flat stink, and I mean stink badly. And that's the majority of them. There's a few exceptions, but not many. They all play the game. They all fatten their wallets with insider trading that's legal for them, but somehow would send us to prison. And that's the ultimate polarization. people don't like the government. People like the media even less because it's a reflection of the government, at least the left side of the government. The people aren't happy. And that's another precondition. There's already dissent. So where do people park their frustration? There's going to be a lot of people parking on the left if they go for separation. And will the right let them separate? Not a chance in you know where. Lincoln didn't. After Fort Sumter, and whatever key trigger event would happen in the future, neither will Trump, neither will any of the people who could follow Trump, like J.D. Vance. None of them will permit this. And guess what, boys and girls? You and me, we're caught in the middle of this nonsense. It's like the inmates are running the prison. We have no cash bail for Congress. If you understand the metaphor, you know exactly what I mean. I'm Dave Hodges. Look forward to your comments. Add on to this. And I'm not saying this is the blueprint, but I'm telling you, a lot of the things that I've said are definitely the elements of what this could lead to. And I'll tell you, you don't want to live in a country that's going to be like this. It would make getting home from a grocery store in Caracas, Venezuela, a picnic compared to what life would be like here. Sarajevo, Bosnia, and what we went through in the 90s, where we'd snipers on the roof. Oh, they're not one of us. Boom. That was commonplace. People had to hide at night if they were on the wrong side of ethnicity in those countries. Because you'll have these subculture wars as well in a civil war. And then all the claims of racism that are going on today, some valid, some not valid, they'll all be valid. People will carry out their prejudices as biases in a violent environment. And I'm calling on people as we come up to the 2026 midterm, if we get to this, to toss them all. Make a list. Who do you think should be returned in your district? You don't need to know about Boston if you live in Phoenix. And if you live in San Diego, you don't need to know about Laramie, Wyoming. Just in your area. Do a little research. Who deserves to be returned to office? Don't buy the campaign speeches. That could be the worst thing you hear. Look at what they do, not what they say, and then make a decision. But where you got to get rid of them is this. Do it in the primary, not the general election. Do it in the primary. And that research starts now. Joni Ernst is not running for re-election in the Senate next year. And I think this is a great thing. You know, she's a Republican. So much for Dave Hodges only supports GOP. That's not true. I'm glad she's not running. Now you need to find a good candidate, Iowa, in your Republican primary. Someone who will go to Washington and do away with rules for thee, but not for me. Someone who will outlaw the illegal lobbying that corporations do that wreck our republic form of democracy, because everyone's for sale for the campaign donations. They need to be made illegal. And then to impose strict codes of conduct for ethics and following the laws, and you prosecute those who don't. And you prosecute them as aggressively as you would someone off the street. That's what needs to happen in the new America. And it's only through a turnover of the illegitimate people that are running this country right now can we make a change. But I'm advocating for the change to happen within the system. I want nothing to do with a civil war. And I will tell you this, a civil war will not solve the problems. It'll shift the balance of power. It'll shift the distribution of wealth. But it will not shift bad human nature. Because someone's creeps are going to take over or stay in power. We need to put good people in. That's the answer. And at the baseline, for me, they've got to be people of God. That's my bias. I'm Dave Hodges. This is the Common Sense Show.